Hello, everyone, and welcome to Every Woman on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. We're here on a special post-election show where we're going to start with a little bit of a discussion about some of the big news impacting women in politics in the United States after the elections of this Tuesday. And then we're going to have an interview with one of our hosts here on Every Woman. Marvita Oliver is going to talk about her work for Habitat for Humanity and some of the really interesting stories that she's encountered while working with them. So let's just start out and talk a little bit about this election. Hopefully everybody's heard something about it by now. Anthony, we had a record number of women that are being sent to the new Congress, don't we?
Yeah!
Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, instead of only 107 women, we now have 121 women in Congress. So that means we go from 20% to 23%.
That's nice, but out of 535 members, we hope that we could do a little better. But this is a record high number, so we certainly want to celebrate it as a real victory for women having an equal voice in politics across the United States. We also had a whole slew of critical races in this election that resulted in some really interesting candidates making into office. Some of them that come to mind, we had two Native American women sent to Congress for the first time.
One right here in Kansas, Cerise Davis.
I know, she beat out Kevin Yoder, who is a four-term congressman, I believe, in a very Republican Johnson County. It was really stunning. I was very surprised early on when the polls on 538.com showed that she had an 8-to-10-point lead, and she managed to keep that lead. I was much more surprised at seeing Laura Kelly winning the governorship of Kansas, because Nate Silver in 535 had said that she was the underdog candidate, that she was probably going to lose by between 9-10% of the vote for a while, and then she narrowed the gap to just a couple percent, and I was absolutely shocked. I was watching the elections down in New Orleans for work, and that was really
amazing.
Just came out of left field. I think it really caught Mr. Kobach by surprise as well. They did not look very happy. I guess. Yeah, happy is the word I'm looking for.
Yeah, not so happy. Cerise Davis wasn't the only first Native American woman elected to Congress. As you said, there were two. Who was the other person?
Deb Haaland, I think,
yes,
is how her name is pronounced. And she will be replacing New Mexico Democratic Representative Michelle Grisham, who left her seat to run for governor. We also had our first Muslim women elected to Congress.
Yes,
we had
two of them as well.
I know. We had Michigan Democrat Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar from Minnesota, who also is the first Somali American to win a seat in Congress. There's been a lot of jokes on social media about Mike Pence's Mike Pence having a crisis of faith as he has to swear in two Muslim women with the Quran
Bible
into their seats.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, they're Muslim women, so they would use the Quran.
Of course. I mean, you know.
So we also had the first female senator from Tennessee. Somehow Tennessee has managed to avoid having a female senator for quite some time. Possibly they've just hit all the women folk away and, you know, not let them leave the kitchen and get out into the wild blue yonder. We also had the first female senator from Arizona.
And that's surprising.
Arizona's a real mix of it's a real mix of politics, because it has some very, very, it's a state that's considered to be strongly Republican, but often so far on the right side towards libertarianism that it comes all the way around full circle and meets the radical left in some cases. So you actually have a strong Democratic presence there in Arizona. And, of course, because Republican Senator Jeff Flake is decided to leave the Senate rather than continue to fight for his party and so forth, it's guaranteed that there are going to be either a Democratic woman or a Republican woman taking his place. Texas is sending its first Hispanic women to Congress ever. Given the very large Hispanic population or Hispanic heritage contribution that comes from Texas, it's amazing that it's taken this long to have Hispanic women representing.
Well, the same thing about Native American women. I mean, the Native American women anywhere in the country.
So. I just wonder, too, going back, stepping back to our two Native American women elected to Congress, if Donald Trump is going to dare call either one of them Pocahontas. Because I think Charisse Davids could really kick his butt. I mean, she is quite strong. And but yes. Unfortunately, I mean, he could literally get on the pulpit, his bully pulpit, and claim that they were not really Native American, that they were Portuguese or, you know, quote, some kind of Cambodian, unquote, and 35% of the country would believe him and start saying, whoever heard of the Ho-Chunk Nation? Sounds like it was made up. And that's just how terrible.
Youth groaning.
Yes, it is absolutely. Let's move on here.
Speaking of youth, there was the youngest person ever elected to Congress, also a woman, 29 years old. Think of that, a millennial in Congress.
I know, and that really is incredible. That was Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and she will be 29 years old when she fills her seat from the Bronx. And the thing is that she's recently been in the news because she is saying that she can't afford the rent right now to move to Washington to represent her own district.
Just like everyone else cannot afford rent.
She's been, Fox News had a heyday making fun of her, saying, well, we saw you wearing $1,000 suits during the campaign. She revealed that she had borrowed those suits from people and had fired back a pretty fiery missive towards the Fox News anchors for making fun of her. Really, the only thing that they could really criticize her for was that she was A, a Democrat, and B, her fashion sense, which tells you where
when you have to get suits from thrift stores like me, you have a limited amount that will fit you.
We may someday have someone who gets elected, male or female, as the first person who campaigns in thrift store clothing. I'm actually wearing a thrift store skirt right now, so maybe I could
thrift stores are great.
I know. There was one that used to do things like four skirts for $10, and I bought like 40 of them one day, and it was crazy. Yeah. We also had South Dakota elected its first woman governor. Republican Kristi Noem will take the lead in that state after previously defeating Democrat Billy Sutton. So she is the first woman governor, but she is a Republican. But we'll see how it works out.
Yeah, because women should be for women, logically, you would hope, maybe.
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up because there are some interesting statistics that have been compiled from exit polling in this election. It appears that from exit polling, 92% of black women voted for Democratic or progressive candidates. Only 8% voted for Republicans or other candidates, which I guess could include anyone from Green Party to Communist or whatever.
Independent liberalism or write-ins.
The interesting statistic, though, as well, when you look at white women, 49% of white women voted Republican nationwide, and 49% voted Democratic. So it was split very evenly, which was something that was not expected. Folks had thought that women, white women, would vote somewhere about 6-4 in favor of the Democratic Party.
If it's 49% and 49%, aren't we missing 2%?
Presumably that's other independent.
Yes.
What's that party in England, the Raving Mad Loony Party? Or
monster raving loony party.
Thank
you.
The anarchist party.
There could be. Is there an anarchist party? How do you take a seat if you're in the anarchist party? Because by definition, you don't want to participate in the government.
You probably refuse to take a seat.
Well, you say, although I am elected, I will not serve.
And therefore, there will be an empty seat in Congress.
That sounds...
It might be more productive and useful than some of the people that are there. Sorry, I have a low opinion of some politicians.
Oh, boy.
I didn't say who.
In some states, white women voted overwhelmingly for the Republican candidate. For instance, in the critical Senate race in Texas between Ted Cruz, the incumbent, and Beto O'Rourke, O'Rourke only received 39% of the white female vote in that state. So that does follow along quite a bit with the heavy Republican presence in Texas overall. So other folks are going to be digesting and sifting through this data for some time, and we're hoping next week here on Every Woman, that is Saturday the 17th, to devote the show to a more in-depth look at the results of these races and what the implication is for women, and also to look at the ballot measures, both at the state and local level, that were passed across the nation that could impact women. For instance, I believe Alabama passed a constitutional amendment against abortion. The legality of that is still somewhat up in the air, and you know, whether or not that will come into conflict with the Federal Supremacy Clause, and of course, with five conservative justices on the Supreme Court, this could eventually be a very important case that we all have to look forward to sitting through and sweating over, regardless of which side of the issue that you're on. We also had a very large number of first-time House members, 31 first-time members. There were a lot of incumbents defeated in this election here, and I think when you look at the whole of it, the election exceeded some people's expectations in terms of progress for women, but it also failed to meet other people's expectations as well. I know that women thought that Heidi Heitkamp was going to be reelected, but she was fighting a very uphill battle with significant negative polling, and there was just no way. I think Nate Silver gave her a 1-in-8 chance of winning the election just beforehand. So there were some, there was some backsliding, but overall it was a pretty good election, and it's kind of sets stage for what's going to happen in 2020 coming up. So having set the stage for this show by talking over the election results at a high level, we're going to take a brief break for some station announcements and come back and talk with our very own Marvita Oliver.
Marvita!
Play KKFI. That's all you have to tell your smart speaker to get the news, views, and music you love. I remember the first time I told my smart speaker to play KKFI. Within seconds, I was listening to the stream. Pretty cool. KKFI, wherever you are.
Two topics, genetic engineering and the origin of the moon. On Exploration with Michio Kaku, Monday morning from 5 to 6.
We navigate the world with intersecting identities. Does this way of looking at ourselves and others lead to divisions?
Fundamentally, all of our problems in some way come back to this false, totally harmful belief that all of us have that somehow we are more important than someone else. I think that's wrong.
We talk about what it means to be a better neighbor. That's next time on Interfaith Voices.
Tuesday at noon, right after Link's Mix.
Hello and welcome back to Every Woman. I'm Fiona, and you've already heard who is with me in the studio today, but we're going to get to talk to Marvita Oliver, which is a special treat because usually she's behind the microphone asking the questions, and people don't get to learn what an interesting life she's had and about her stories. And today she's actually volunteered to open up and share more of herself with us. So thank you very much for that, Marvita.
It's a little overwhelming, but I'm glad to be able to be here because Every Woman is such a a great show in my mind that I just love being able to participate in whatever way I can.
Thank you so much for that. And I know that they're going to be talking about a subject near and dear to your heart, which is Habitat for Humanity in Kansas City.
Yeah, I'm a terrible Habitat person. I used to volunteer for Habitat, and that was a couple years ago. And I would go every Wednesday, and I would volunteer at the Habitat Kansas City office, which is at Linwood and Paseo. And when I first started, there was a group of women, and we all happened to have names that began with M. So we were the M girls or whatever. I don't know. We were the M people. So every Wednesday, it was the M girls. Mary Sue, hey Mary Sue, Margot, hey Margot, and Marvita. And we were like hanging out on Wednesdays, checking, you know, doing the Habitat thing, and it was a lot of fun.
So you said you did that a few years ago. Are you now working for them, or did you stop volunteering, or what happened?
That's exactly what happened. I was volunteering, and I did that for, I'm not sure, maybe a year, short of a year, and then I went to work at in telecommunications, and then I came back to Habitat somewhat unexpectedly, but they had an AmeriCorps position, which is a position that lasts for about 10 months, and you help out in the office. You're not you're not a regular staff person, but as an AmeriCorps person, you are taking, you know, doing what you can to help. And my position at this time is a homeowner services coordinator. And what I do is I help the new Habitat homeowners through the process of acquiring their home. And part of the things that they have to do is sweat equity, which is typically 350 hours of sweat equity. Plus, they have to go through some educational programs, and also just save money towards their closing. So there's just a lot of educational things that happen to help inform a person who's never had a home, who's never owned a home before, understand exactly what it takes to own a home.
I think I tended to, because you rarely see the details when you see things on TV.
Yeah.
You see that so-and-so got a home through Habitat for Humanity, or one of the classic things that they like to hold up as an example of how so many people share as a meme how the Democrat Party is different from the Republican Party, and they show former President Carter building a home for Habitat for Humanity while he had cancer. And that's frequently shared as a meme, but they never sort of say, how do you actually get a home from Habitat for Humanity? Do they just hand over the keys and that's it? So what is the process like?
Well, it's a process. And I'll tell you, the best marketers for Habitat homeowners are the new Habitat homeowners. When I first started work in September, I was getting, you know, my training in, and I would sit at the table with some homeowners who were going through the sweat equity process. And boy, they'd sit at that table, and people would come up, and they'd be asking questions about Habitat, and they just, you know, tell them, you know, it's a challenge, but you can do it. I did it, you know, and you can do it too. And I'd be like just listening, because I understood they know exactly what they're talking about. It is a challenge. I think the first challenge is filling out the paperwork. It's an application. You have to fill out an application, and it asks you for things like, you know, your recent check stubs, your tax, 2 years of taxes, whether or not who you're renting from or not, you know, those types of things. So it asks you a lot of financial and private information. And then it'll ask you, based on the houses that we have available, to select a house. And so you have two things you have to go through. You have to make it through that application, and whether or not you qualify as far as financially in need. And then not only being financially in need, but also being, if perhaps you're in a situation where your house is like not a great living situation. You have a small house and maybe not enough rooms to suit your family. So there's different criteria that they have to meet. But, you know, I think one of the best lessons I learned one time, a Habitat homeowner, she was at the table and she was like, you know, you may not get selected the first time. But I wasn't selected the first time is what she said. And she said, but I stayed with it and I applied the second time. And she was a homeowner that was going to be getting her keys shortly. And so she said, you just got to stay in there, stay determined, and you can do it, you know. And I was like, man, these guys are blowing me away.
So you said sweat equity, but there might be people with disabilities or stuff. So can the sweat equity be things like manning the phones and stuff like that, or does it have to be building other houses for other people and learning to do maintenance?
Well, it really depends. There's for this, the new latest round of homeowners, applicants, it is 350 hours of sweat equity, and they have to do 25 hours per month. Excuse me. And for some people, that can be a challenge. We are going to work with everybody, you know, to make sure that they can get it done. And usually, if they have family or friends, they can also help. And so they can get their sweat equity done through them as well. But we really want to make sure that they're in the house doing some construction, because that construction shows them what's required, you know, as far as maintaining the house and what it, and it kind of takes away some of the mystery behind, you know, building a house and home ownership, you know, because when you're holding a jackhammer in your basement, you know what I'm saying? Or you're painting a wall or putting up a wall or putting in insulation, that really takes away some of that mystery that's behind building a home and helps you to realize, you know, I can do this, I can handle this. And so it really helps them to understand that there's more than one thing about owning a home. You don't just get the keys to the house, but you also get information that is helpful in helping you to maintain the house and make sure that you're a good neighbor as well.
Yeah, you're not just doing the work in a pay it forward capacity, it's also educating you and teaching you skills at the same time.
I'm going to tell you, Habitat for Humanity is about the best model I've seen for building homes, especially in distressed neighborhoods, because they don't just build one home, but a lot of times they'll have more than one home in the neighborhood. And so they're like, I remember when I was volunteering, there was four homes in the neighborhood. There was like three. There's two on the block, and then there was one around the corner. And then they threw a rock the block thing. And the rock the block is where you don't just deal with the homes that are Habitat homes, but then you go to the rest of the homeowners and you say, hey, you got any exterior work that you need help with, or can I help you paint your house, or can we spray wash your house, or can we help you with your garage, or, you know, any kind of painting or building that needs to be done on the exterior part. And they'll do that, and that's like the best thing you can do, because everybody's like happy. Oh, you know, it's not every day you can get that kind of help. And I think that's the best model, because not only do you help improve one home at a time, but you're improving the whole neighborhood. And when you're talking about distressed neighborhoods, because we're sending these homeowners into distressed neighborhoods, and we're expecting them to be able to deal with the situation, you know, that may not be always the best. But when we can help bring up the neighborhood as well, that's just the best solution I could imagine.
And if not a lot of people realize just how big of an impact Habitat for Humanity has. I have some facts from their website. Since 1976, when they were founded, 13.2 million people have had their affordable housing needs met via the program. Mm-hmm. And they've improved the housing conditions of nearly 3.5 million people. And there are overall 2.1 million actually more than 2.1 million volunteers that are mobilized annually. There's even a National Women Build Week that is held. It says that 17,000 women volunteered at 300 sites across the United States last year.
It's crazy, man. I mean, it's so funny because, you know, Being a volunteer was about the best thing that could happen to me, especially to become an employee of Habitat, because as a volunteer, you kind of get what's happening as far as the work, you know. And I'm going to tell you, if you want to build a house, there is no better way to build a house than to have about 10 or, you know, 10 other people standing right next to you, you know, painting the wall. I remember the worst job I had. I'm going to be for real. The worst job I had was in a basement one time. You know, an old Kansas City basement where they have the dirt and then yes. They have the brick walls.
Tell me you didn't find a body down there.
I think they had cleared up everything before. That's funny. But, okay, so here it was about... It was the M girls, and then a few other people. But we had to go in, and we had to. You know how they paint the walls and put like a white painting. So we had to go in and repair any like holes, and then paint the walls. And oh my goodness, that was about the. That was so tedious, but it was. It was fun because we were all doing it together. If we had had to do that by ourselves, it would have been overwhelming.
Oh, yeah.
But because we were standing next to each other, and you know, I'm telling you, nobody liked it. It was like nobody liked it. But because we were doing it together, we were able to get through it, and we were able to enjoy the fact that we were able to bond over the fact that we did it together.
Yeah, and you have had good conversations, and it made things go better.
You know,
instead of just watching paint dry.
Exactly, you talked and let to help pass the time, and it's you know usually a day will start at 8 a.m. and then it'll go to about 3 o'clock or 3:30, and you'll put in maybe 7.5 hours, and you'll have lunch, and somebody will come and bring you snacks or something like that. And you'll probably bring your own lunch as well. But it's really just a real fun environment. I'm going to tell you, you know, just listening to those voting results, when you're in a Habitat home, you're surrounded by a diverse community, but they are all on the same page. And that same page that they're on is to build that house together. And so even though you might have different backgrounds or different opinions about one thing or another, they are all on the same opinion and the same page when it comes to what it takes to build that house and make it the best they can for that new homeowner.
I think that Rock the Block Party sounds like a brilliant idea as well, because I could imagine people in the neighborhood being jealous and going, well, I had to pay for my house. How come they get it free? And then giving them all those cool things that I could see that would then stop them from resenting things. And
well, it's one thing that we've learned is that, okay, I remember we did a Rock the Block in Olathe, and people weren't exactly familiar with the process. But what we did was we just kept going back to them to let them know, you know, if you need some help, let us know and we'll sign you up. And what happened was, unfortunately, some people didn't sign up. And so that's one thing we really want to make sure people get more information about. If you have a chance and somebody comes to you about Rock the Block, sign up. Don't hesitate. Sign up because you will love the experience.
So you said you've got some funny stories, ones that you're actually able to tell on air, and perhaps with names changed.
Yes. I do have, okay, I have some funny stories. Just as being an AmeriCorps volunteer in general, right, because when I started, before coming to AmeriCorps, I was working at Sprint. And then I had gotten my own home, and so I had actually taken a leave of absence to renovate my home. Then my house got, the closing got moved from 1 month to the next month, and so I had to take another leave of absence. And so it was like, oh, my goodness. But meanwhile, that's when I kind of learned about the Habitat position, and we were talking, and that kind of changed my whole situation. Okay, so then from going from I was thinking I was just going to be on a leave of absence for two months. It turned out I didn't start my Habitat job for another July, August, September, for another three more months. I wasn't working. I was working on my house, and I had 3 months of no, you know, of lax time to fill. But just joining Habitat as an AmeriCorps volunteer has been such a blessing and such a wonderful experience, much more than I even anticipated. I was coming from a telesales environment where I was working in an office, and it's, you know, it's nothing bad about that. It's you know, some people, you know, really are well suited to that, but I found that I was maybe more suited to not that. And so when I started with Habitat, it was like, oh man, it was just like, oh, this is wonderful. But I think the thing that I found out first of all was just meeting all the new homeowners. It's like, it was like 16 new homeowners that I had to meet, you know, or learn about and figure out what their status was as far as their equity, their sweat equity status. And then I think the first thing that really did it for me was the very first house dedication, or we call them house blessing, that I went to. Mm-hmm. It was on a Sunday, and it was one of the homeowners. I was like, oh, this is, you know, I was just like, this is great, because I, even as a volunteer, I had never been to a house blessing. All I had seen was the framing of the house, and I had put in a floor and stuff like that, but I hadn't seen a homeowner who was about to move in. And when I went to that first house blessing, I was almost in tears. I don't know if, I mean, I find myself almost in tears a lot of times in Habitat. But when I went to that house blessing and I heard that homeowner, and she talked about, and you said the numbers, but even some of her family had been Habitat homeowners, you know, so it was like, oh, wow, you know, but not only, but it wasn't just that, it was seeing all the volunteers in the room and understanding and appreciating what they had done, and then seeing her family as well as other people who were Habitat future homeowners coming to celebrate with her. It was just like, wow, this is, I mean, I just like, I wish everybody could have this kind of experience in their jobs, because I couldn't have anticipated the great appreciation that I was going to have for being an AmeriCorps worker with Habitat.
Habitat spans a lot of different organizations in the community and teams up with them to do good work, and they're really well known for that. One of our favorite organizations, the Center for Inclusion, which is located right down, oh, just three doors down from us here, is going to be doing a Pride Build Kansas City to get the members of the LGBTQ community out to team up and learn how to help make some people's homes better. And
oh, right. And that, I mean, that's even something that was happening today. We had a one of our homes was being visited by the, what's the name of the show? Queer Eye for the Straight Guy. Queer Eye for the Straight Guy. So they did a reboot of that show, and now some of the new people in the Queer Eye for the Straight Guy people, a couple of the guys are from Missouri, and one guy in particular, Bobby Burke, I believe, he is a interior designer. I hope I got that right. But they featured him today, and I was actually delivering lunch to the house that he was filming at. But they featured him today, doing some painting in one of the Habitat houses. So I know Queer Eye have been visiting us on and off this year, because I saw some stuff about them with the Kansas City Public Library and things. But yeah, they were at a Habitat home today, and it was all Hollywood. And a whole bunch of people in that house, you know. But I mean, usually it's still a lot of people, but it was a little bit more activity going on. And I didn't get to talk to him, but I saw some of the cast members. And, you know, I'm going to tell you, it's just anybody who volunteers in one way or another with Habitat, it's all good. They are just so there. It's just, I have never been in a organization or around a group of people where everybody just has such good things to say about the process and the experience. And I think that's one thing that I really appreciate about Habitat for Kansas City.
Thinking of the process, you said that you renovated your own home. Was that using skills that you had learned with Habitat for Humanity? And how do you learn those skills? Do you just pick them up on the job, or do they train you first?
Well, you go in, you have no training. I haven't finished my home, let's be clear. I haven't finished it. But what they did was, so like I said, one day I was using a sledgehammer in the basement to drill a hole for maybe some plumbing or something, probably plumbing. Another day I was putting in a subfloor in the attic. Another day I was wrapping the house with that paper insulation that you put around the house. Another day I was putting in foam insulation in the walls, you know. And then another day I was making sure that the insulation was in, so there, as you go from one floor to the next, it would pass a fire inspection. So everything that we did, we were taught on that day, you know. So you don't really have to go with any knowledge. But once you get there, I think the thing that you have to go with is a willingness to do the job. And then they'll teach you. And then once you're taught, then you go away with that skill. Because it's really not that difficult, especially when there's a lot of people helping.
So they teach you the skills as and when you use them, rather than making you do like a week's training course up front and you'll forget things before you actually come around to using it.
Exactly. They teach you, you're all like, oh, giddy because I'm using a jackhammer. It was like the longest time before I can even figure out what to call that thing. But you're using a jackhammer and taking pictures, you know. And because there's so many people working beside you, you can have a little fun, and it's not like on a tight schedule so much, because when you do have many hands doing the work, the job is going to get done in a little bit better time frame.
And I heard you say you're using a jackhammer and taking pictures, and I can just imagine the sort of horrific accidents you can have with jackhammer selfies.
Well, no, I wasn't taking pictures. Somebody took a picture of me in the jackhammer, and I took a picture of him, but yeah, with the jackhammer. But yeah, you know, they're doing that kind of work really bonds you to the person you're working next to.
I can imagine, because one of my most fun experiences at university was taking a sledgehammer to a friend's kitchen. Their behest, of course. I didn't just walk in there with a sledgehammer and say, hey, I know your landlord is going to object to this, but...
I don't know. Some mornings, if I don't have the tea ready for you, I can see you doing that.
I wouldn't do that to our kitchen. That would delay the tea even longer.
Well, it's that kind of thing.
You don't see yourself when you don't have tea.
Yeah, I always tell people at work never to stand between a woman and her caffeine.
Well, caffeine, I found that caffeine is very important at Habitat. I'm not a big caffeine drinker, but that's what I hear. If I want to be happy, Dana Bass, she's like the director of volunteers. So if you're a Habitat homeowner, you're going to go through her. And she's like, I got to have my caffeine, and then I'm happy. You know, she's happy anyway, but that's something that she says. So it's a lot of... You know, it's a lot of the organization itself runs so smoothly that when I came to Habitat, I wasn't really sure what to expect. But I would have to say it's a smooth working, you know, program, and I'm just really glad to be a part of it.
And I think you said earlier, before we were on the show, that they've got a program coming up for
teaching people to weatherize?
Yes, that was something that even happened today. We had a weatherization workshop, and it was right on time because it was getting so cold. Remember, we had the snow yesterday, unexplored.
Second snow of the year.
Yeah,
it's
crazy. And so we had the snow, and it was like, you know, are these people going to show up? And I was like, well, it's going to be cold, so maybe because it's cold, they're going to show up. And actually, we had a nice room full of, when I came to the building, the parking lot was full, so I said, oh, perfect. And so we had a nice room full of people. And what we did, we had an energy kit that we gave them, and it was really a great kit that was provided by another organization. I don't know the name right now, but what they did was they gave you things like light bulbs, you know, LED light bulbs, and they can be so expensive. They can be like $8 a pop, you know, but they got four light bulbs in the kit. They got that plastic wrap that you
put in the windows,
yeah,
to seal them.
Yeah, with the blow dryer.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we got that, and we had things to put on your tap waters to increase your tap flow, and in the bathroom and in the kitchen. And we had thermometers for your freezer.
Oh.
For your freezer, yeah. So you can make sure that the freezer and the refrigerator were, the temperature of those were good. But, you know, it was a really well-thought-out box and, you know, something that you definitely need. They even had little strips that if you put it on a gap of your door, if there's a gap between your door, it'll prevent the air from going.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so I was like, check this out. And then there were some ladies that came and they talked about some of the weatherization things that needed to be done. And I was just happy that a lot of people came. Some of those people, they even showed an interest in becoming Habitat homeowners as well. So, you know, we're always looking to put the word out that, you know, if you're interested, if you're a person who's renting, because I think that was what somebody was talking about, the high price of rents. Rent
yes.
can be so expensive. And on the other hand, you can become a Habitat homeowner and your rent, it can be, your mortgage payment can be somewhere around $500 a month, whereas you're paying, a lot of people are paying $1,000 a month for rent in an inadequate housing space.
And you covered sort of inadvertently there a question I was going to ask. Like the winterization things and other workshops, are they only open to people that are just doing the Habitat for Humanity program, or to anyone in the public that's interested?
Anybody in the public. We this was the first time we used Eventbrite, which was so perfect because you know, Eventbrite sends you out a reminder and all of that thing. But we used Eventbrite and let them, and they sent out the messages for people to sign up. And we got about 50 people who signed up. And I would say and three of them were us, you know, at Habitat Testing the System. But I would say about 25-ish people showed up, which was really a great deal. They came out. We had some donuts and coffee, and we provided them all with an energy kit. So I think they went away very satisfied.
I think that's really great to know. And how would people find out? Is that on the regular Habitat website?
Yes. If they want to know about any of the events that we have coming up, I would definitely direct them to the Habitat worksite, which is habitatkc.org. That's habitkc.org.
I think you missed an AT in there.
habitatkc.org.
Yeah. I can cheat. I've got it in front of me.
habitatkc.org. And you'll get to the Habitat website. And then when you get there, I think there's a link at the very top as far as you want to own a home. You can click on that link. If you want to find out some of the other things that we're doing, you can click on that link, what we do. And there's another aspect about Habitat that we don't want to forget, and that's those great Restore stores. The Habitat Restores are places where you can go and find lower-priced items to help renovate your homes.
Awesome. So we will be talking more about that when we come back from this short station break. So we're back with Every Woman and with Marvita, and we were just talking about the Restore stores for Habitat for Humanity.
Tell us about those. I'm going to tell you, you know, I don't know if you guys have ever been to a Restore store, but I had to kind of control myself because I would start going into those stores and I'd be like ready to spend some money because they have like really nice cabinets. The very first time I went to one, they had a Crawfoot club bathtub. I was like, "No, you don't." It was sold, but they did. But they also had like some seriously nice natural cabinets. You know, so if you go to a Restore store, you can find some of the best items at a lower price to help renovate your home, from sinks to chairs to bathtubs, to doors especially. Doors are so expensive, but if you go to Habitat, you can get a door for $5 and $10.
So are people donating these items, or are they things that they're taking out of houses that they're refurbishing, and then they refurbish them and refinish them off-site and then put them in the store, or how does it work?
A lot of times it's something that's being donated, especially when people are renovating their own homes. You'll be driving. I know where I live, you'll drive down the road, and maybe somebody might have a sofa on the curb, you know, or something yes. like that. But, you know, a lot of people, between businesses and then individual homeowners, they'll deliver things to the Habitat stores. One time I was at a Habitat store and there was a delivery from a business, and they were delivering some tile for a bathroom. And I was like, "Oh man, this is perfect," you know. I almost had to get into a fight with the Habitat, because I wasn't working with Habitat at the time. But I almost had to get into a fight with the Habitat person because I was like, "Yeah, I'll take it." But you know, there'll be people that deliver boxes of tile, boxes of different things that would be very useful. You know, a lot of times you don't need a lot, but they'll have like an amount that might be useful for a small bathroom or something like that, or they'll have carpet that you might want to use in your garage or your basement, you know, that you didn't want to put in your home. But all these things are at a more affordable price, and it helps you to get through that home renovation so that you're not just spending so much money, because it's going to cost you a lot of money. And you're always looking for ways to save a dollar here and there.
Yeah, I remember growing up, we got a couple of small rooms, and so we were able to use offcuts when the carpet store had done a big job somewhere else, and they got the offcuts that wouldn't fit for most
right.
rooms, but we had a tiny room, so we could get them at a half or a third the price of that.
That's what it's like. Yeah. And it's kind of fun. You know, you go into the store, they have lights, they have lampshades, they have tables, they have chairs, you know, and you just go into the store, and depending on what your vision is for your renovation, then you might find something there and be able to pick it up. I remember one time I went, because it was kind of crazy now that I think about it, but when I finally had closed on my house, I had all these visions in my house, in my mind, about what I want my house to look like. And so I went to a Habitat store, and it was in Johnson County. And when I got there, they were delivering this really nice mahogany wood kind of end table. And I just stood by that table. I would not move. I was like, "How much is this?" and so they went online to see how much it costs to sell it regular. And then they'll do some kind of figuring. I don't know what it is, but they figured out how much they were going to charge, and they told me, and I was like, okay. It was a little bit more than I expected, but still I understood, because it was an expensive piece. And I just stood by that thing. You know, you can get some really nice pieces at Habitat, so I'm gonna encourage anybody out there. We have four stores. One is in North Kansas City, one is in Johnson County, one is in Doramus, and the other one, which is our brand new store, we just launched it a month or two ago, and that's in Martin City. And so if you want to find some great things to put into your house, you're renovating a home, check out our Habitat Restores, and I'm sure you will be so happy you went there.
And I got the website open so I can cheat. If anyone's used to going to the one in Waldo, that's moved to the Martin City location now.
I was used to the one in Waldo. Yeah.
So anyone in Waldo, you're going to have to go all the way to Martin City to see Marvita standing by things and refusing to move so you can't buy them.
Well, they're in Johnson County. Yep, that's true. But from what I'm told, I haven't been to the one in Martin City yet, but from what I'm told, it's a really nice store. And I just have to encourage anybody who wants the Habitat experience, just check out one of our stores. It's something where you can appreciate the discount that you'll get for some of those items.
And for those of you out there in Waldo, if you're thinking of going to Martin City, that's about a 2 cappuccino drive.
2 cappuccinos.
Because we know how posh you all are.
Well, let's go cover quickly a topic that we haven't touched on much. Marvita says she was a volunteer, but she hasn't told us how you go about volunteering.
Okay, actually, you know, you actually do have to sign up to volunteer, and then they'll take you through a class and let you, you'll go through a class, you'll be with a few other people, and they'll kind of tell you what you have to expect as far as when you come to the site, you know, how to dress. What to expect as far as sometimes there'll be a homeowner there, and you know, it's good to you can ask them questions and things like that, but you know, what kind of clothes to wear, what time to come and what time you'll be expected to come and leave and that type of thing.
And do they actually build year-round in Kansas City? Because winter's awful and it can affect, like, pouring concrete and stuff like that.
It's true, and as painting as well. And so what happens is right now we're still building. The temperature has dropped, but we're still building, we're painting. And it just depends. If things get too cold or depending on the schedule of what's needed, it might affect the build, you know, as far as what can happen or not. But we just keep on going, you know, even in the winter. Because I know, I remember when I was here, I remember we worked in the inside and we did jobs inside, and maybe there might be like a heater that they would turn on to make sure we were warm and everything.
Yeah, I could imagine a mad rush at the moment trying to get the outsides of everything finished so she can do indoor jobs for the rest of the winter.
Yeah.
And I think at this point we should wrap up our interview with Marvita, because I do have a special announcement about one of our shows coming up. And so I'd really like to thank Marvita for being our guest today instead of a host, and remind people that the location they can find information for the local branch is habitatkc.org.
Yes, and that's located at the intersection of Paseo and Linwood Avenue, which is east of Troost, and it's a great neighborhood. And one other thing I can say, being an AmeriCorps, if you ever want to be an AmeriCorps person, you will possibly have a place to live. So that's another advantage of working for Habitat.
Thank you, Marvita.
Also, if you're interested in the Pride Build event, you can email K Strickland, STRICKLAND, at habitatkc.org for the first ever Pride Build here in KC.
And that's awesome. Ken Strickland, and he's out with the Restore stores.
Thank you, Anthony, and thank you, Marvita, and thank you for co-hosting, Una. And I'd like to tell everyone that a week on Monday, November 19th, Jaws of Justice Radio is going to air the play The Day Room Club by Patty Pruitt. It's been performed by inmates at the Women's Reception Diagnostic and Correctional Center, and their stories inspired the play. And they're going to do a special 2-hour episode of the show, and it'll be available as a podcast as well. And it is a production of Prism Performing Arts of St. Louis and is directed by their artistic director, Christopher Limber. You can listen in to the Day Room Club in the 9 o'clock hour on Monday, 19th of November, and also to interviews with Patty Pruitt, Christopher Limber, and Katie Lehman in the 10 o'clock hour. And coming up, we have
Donna Wolf Show. And then stay tuned for Guess Who's Coming to Kansas City with MC Richardson, and we will be having a tiny bit of music to play you until they're ready. And you have been listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
Yay!
Put on your face, know your place, shut up and smile, don't spread your eggs. I could do that, but no one.